You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. And as you know, there is no Luke. I mean, he exists. He lives. He's in the world. He's there. He's just not here on the podcast. He's got a baby coming. So I did the next best thing. I brought in somebody that I thought would be a great fit for the show. He's been great on the unofficial Disney Tonight show, if you guys have seen that, with David Studebaker and all of us. And I'm going to totally butcher his last name, even though he said it to me like 15 times. So please welcome my guest host and actually our guest for the show today, Mr. Danny Howawini, right?
There you go. That's perfect, James. You had me nervous, but you nailed it.
I get so nervous when it comes to people's names. I'm the worst.
Growing up with a name like that, you kind of get thick skin around it. So I am more than prepared for how somebody wants to try to pronounce it. But yeah, you nailed it.
So what is your last name? What's the origin of that?
Most people assume it's Hawaiian, just because of the consonants and the way it's spelled. If you look at me, for those of you on YouTube, right? I clearly don't look very Hawaiian. It's Syrian, actually. Okay. So that's my awesome. Parents both came from Syria. Yeah.
Now, are you first generation from there? So like they were in Syria and then you were born here?
Yeah, so I was born here. Yeah, so I'm the first, not the first, but yes, part of that next generation born here in America. Both my parents born out there. My dad came out here, I should know this, early 70s, maybe late 60s, kind of that ballpark. My dad will kill me. Sorry, Dad. And he has his whole story of coming in and knowing no one. He was the first Howawini to be in America. And now there's a whole lot of us here in California and back in Syria and wherever else.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love when I hear people's stories coming from other countries to like come to America. Like when I lived in Las Vegas, this is gonna be so weird. My mechanic was a guy that escaped Iraq during the first war, Iraq war, and he like walked through the desert to get to Kuwait to get out to come to America.
See, I mean, those stories I think are just so crazy because you can't have America without a bunch of stories like that. And, you know, I know this isn't a politics podcast, but obviously, you know, the way immigrants are sort of represented today, but it's like, man, that's what makes this such a cool country to be in. So it's the opportunity that people want to come for, you know?
Yeah, no, America's he's a great mechanic. Yeah, he was an awesome mechanic, actually. Like literally the best. Yeah. And he was so kind and such a good person. Like, I love that guy. Okay. I feel bad. I can't even, like, this is how much I liked him. I thought about driving my cars from California back to Las Vegas just to have him do that's how much I love that guy. Like,
yeah, but down in LA, that's not a terrible drive, right?
right. It's pretty bad.
In the Bay Area, that's a different conversation.
Right. Yeah. So you live, are you in the Bay Area? Is that where you live?
I am. I'm in San Jose, virtual background, San Jose Improv represent, in San Jose, just born and raised out in this part of the state.
That's awesome. And you are you still doing stand-up? I know that when David introduced you, he said that you were a stand-up comedian. Are you still doing stand-up, or how has that changed, or how does that work for you right now?
I mean, it's been crazy. I've never really considered myself a stand-up comedian. I always just sort of consider myself a guy that does stand-up. Obviously, with COVID, everything sort of slowed down, but it's not like it's a thing where I was like, oh, I got to keep grinding. Like, I still just, you know, I talk to funny people. I'm around funny people. I'm, you know, doing podcasts. So I haven't been on stage in quite some time. But again, with opportunities like this, I'm still keeping that muscle fresh, you know?
Yeah. How long have you been doing stand-up for?
So let's see. I'm, 34? I started probably when I was like 20-ish. Wow. Yeah. And you know, so again, I don't want to make it sound like I've just been grinding away for the better part of 10, whatever years, but yeah, since the first time I did it, back at Rooster Tea Feathers in Sunnyvale, it's definitely been a while. So it's definitely something where I've grown comfortable with it, kind of being on stage and having that literal spotlight on.
That's awesome. You brought up Rooster Tea Feathers, which is one club I want to talk to you about, because I've heard things about it, but I don't know anything about it, to be honest with you.
Is that right?
As a club, I've seen it all over the place, and I'm like, what is this place? Because it's such an interesting name for a comedy club.
Yeah, and it's in Sunnyvale, right? I mean, I grew up in the mean streets of Sunnyvale, now, obviously, with like the Silicon Valley being what it is, I think more people are familiar with Sunnyvale. But for those of us that grew up in it, it's just a pretty ho-hum town outside of San Jose and close to San Francisco and that kind of thing. But it was funny, right? A lot of people all of a sudden know what Rooster Teeth Feathers is. And I'm listening to like WTF with Mark Maron, you know, and he's out there saying, oh yeah, Rooster Teeth Feathers has done that. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, I had no idea that this club I just, you know, popped on stage on was one that like so many people have performed at. So yeah, I don't know. Again, we in Sunnyvale kind of, I guess, maybe take it for granted. But yeah, it's definitely a club that big names have performed at, which is really cool and kind of weird.
Yeah, no, it has a cool mascot. It's like such a weird looking. When you think about it, you know what I thought it was? I thought it was a chicken place. I was like, oh, I just chicken place that has comedy shows. That's kind of cool. But then it's like, that's not what it is. So
that is it. Yeah. Again, weird, but it's great. It's really fun, really small, intimate. But everyone there was really nice. And again, obviously it was the first place I ever performed at. So naturally, you know, I kind of have a special place in my heart for it. Plus it's Sunnyvale and that's where I grew up. So yeah.
And is that the first place you ever performed stand up? Was that Rooster Teeth Feathers?
Yeah. Yeah. A friend of mine that I went to high school with, a guy by the name of Bobic, he performed there. And for whatever reason, when I was in high school, I just assumed that being a stand-up comedian was like being in Hollywood movies. I was like, oh, you got to know somebody and you got to toil away for 20 years before you can even find yourself on a stage. But I asked him and, you know, I saw him going on. I was like, wait, he's just doing it. I was like, what? And I reached out and he's like, yeah, they just have like a new talent, you know, like every Wednesday or whatever it is. And you can just go and reach out to them and get stage time. I was like, that's it. So, you know, I entered the new talent comedy competition. I made it across like three nights. I made it to the finals. I do think I had good routines and good material. I also just think because I'm born and raised in Sunnyvale that I kind of packed the house a little bit, sort of, you know, people stuffed the ballot boxes for weenies. But yeah, it was still just kind of a thing that felt validating. I'm like, oh shoot. Okay. Like people are laughing. I feel, you know, crazy butterflies, but I feel confident and comfortable up here. Like, yeah, this is something I can do. And obviously, you know, just kind of meeting some people there and bigger and better from there.
That's awesome. So you started and how'd you get your first material for that kind of stuff? Like, did you take a course? Did you read a book? Like, how'd you kind of get there?
No, definitely. For me, my inspiration is just kind of in my world around me. You know, from an actual comedian standpoint, I always loved the very like high energy comedians, you know, like Robin Williams, people like that, Jim Carrey. Although I don't know if Jim Carrey, you could argue is a classic stand-up comic, you know, but regardless, you know, Dave Chappelle was like somebody that I just like idolized and I love just the fact that it's, he's shocking, right? But it's not always for the sake of shock. He's saying something, he's commenting on something. And not that I have such big and poignant ideas as Dave Chappelle, but it was always that thing of like, you know, wanting to be silly, wanting to be goofy, but also wanting to tell a story, you know, about my life. For me, the biggest inspiration was just my immediate family. You know, I come from a family of immigrants. And so, you know, there's a lot of things they say that are funny unknowingly, right? That I can kind of mine from. And so that was just my material was just weird little things I thought of, but mostly making fun of my parents.
Hey, that's the best stuff. I mean, family stuff is usually good, kid stuff, you know, spouse stuff, all that stuff. So that's great. And then you started doing it there. Where else have you performed at?
So I performed at at San Jose Improv was kind of like the next place I performed at, basically. And that to me was just awesome. And to this day, I think the Improv is probably where I've performed most. I did perform at the Punchline, both in San Francisco and Sacramento, which I don't know. Have you been to the Sacramento Punchline?
I've actually never been to either one of those, believe it or not.
Well, so the San Francisco one is so cool and it's beautiful. And I'm happy that it's still here because there was obviously some drama there, but the Sacramento one is very funny because it's literally in the middle of a strip mall, like next to a mattress store, right? It's just a very strange, but I mean, you go and it's like, oh, it's a Punchline club. But yeah, so that was funny. I also did Cobbs up in San Francisco. And I did just, you know, a couple local shows.
Is that the one on the pier?
No, that's the one on, I want to say like Broadway. I punch everything into Google Maps. So, you know, I'm navigationally challenged, but yeah, I'm pretty sure it's near like Little Italy and that kind of area.
Do you know which one isn't on the boardwalk out there or whatever, on the pier and stuff? Do you know which club that was? Or is
on the pier? I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure somebody's listening to this just screaming at us.
Right. Yeah. That's the first place I ever saw live stand-up comedy, and it was great. Greg Proops is who I saw.
Oh my gosh. There.
Yeah.
Love, so it was a cool and show. All those, yeah, guys. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't remember the name of the club. I'm gonna go nuts. I'm gonna look it up live.
I'm literally typing comedy club on SF here.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one that pops up is Cobbs, but I mean, I'm looking at a map. I mean, Cobbs and Punchline are both, you know, Embarcadero adjacent, but I mean, not necessarily on the pier.
Maybe, is there two Cobbs by chance? Like, is that possible?
I mean, anything's possible. yeah, no, I'm not sure. I mean, it could have just, yeah, no, I mean, maybe. Again, as I zoom in, and this is obviously fascinating podcasting here, but.
Right.
There is actually, oh, here we go. There's an improv theater. Now, again, that's like at Fort Mason, though. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, to be honest with you. I don't remember the place. I just remember when I was in the Navy, we went to San Francisco, and there was an opportunity to go see stand-up comedy or whatever. And I was like, oh, I know Greg Proops. I've seen him on TV. So I'll go see it. And it was awesome. Like, it was a great show. And I was like, that's awesome. And I thought the same thing you thought, like, oh, you're on TV and then you do like stand-up. Like, it works that way.
You have to know somebody. You have to, yeah.
Yeah. And so I wish I would have, like, there was an opportunity to like talk to him or whatever. And I didn't, because I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, and I just like kind of bailed. And, you know, yeah. I was like 18, 19 years old. I had no clue. So I was just like bailed on it. But that was my first comedy club I ever went to. And then the second comedy club I went to was the Improv in Hollywood. And I went and saw, and at that time, Zach Galifianakis was just kind of getting like a little more steam. So
okay.
There, and it was like an early Kevin Hart before anyone really knew Kevin Hart. We saw
that's a hell of a show to be at.
who else do we see? We saw a couple people that like then blew up. But I remember Zach Galifianakis playing the piano and like talking, but not looking at anybody or whatever, just doing jokes. And I'm like, it was so good. I was like, this is genius. Like, what kind of genius is this man? And I remember my wife, like, because we went for a birthday party. My wife was like, you should do that sometimes. I'm like, I don't know how to play the piano and tell jokes. She's like, you don't do that part, just tell jokes. And I was like, I don't know how to do that stuff. But I was always the funny kid, the class clown type kid. So, you know, everyone's 100%. Like, I remember people telling me growing up, like, you should be a comedian. You should be a comedian. And I was like, I don't even know. That's not even like a real job, dude. That's like, you get on TV and then like people let you do stuff. But yeah. Have you performed outside of California? Have you performed like other places too?
No, I have kind of thought of it in terms of just like when going on travel. But I think my problem is just I'm not as familiar with the clubs. Like, obviously there are like big name clubs that people know about, but I'm not necessarily traveling to those places or anywhere near, you know, where I would need to be like, hey, yeah, let me get to just like 5 minutes. That's all. Like, yeah, so I've thought of it. I would love to, obviously, but no, it's all been in California here.
Yeah, it's fun. I've done New York a couple times. Nice. And that's fun. It's a different crowd, man, than New
California. I can only imagine.
And so, and also, we should have David come tell us a story, but David, it was me and David and Luke. We went to New York for the Golden Door Film Festival, which was in New Jersey. And nice. David was able to perform at a club there. And I believe it was The Stand. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I know it's Stand. I'm going to totally butcher it. He's going to get mad. But we had every single New York comedian come up before David. And every single one was dirty. And every single one harassed the crowd. And every single one said the most offensive stuff you've ever heard in your life. And then David comes up, and you know David, he's not that. And it was just, people loved it. People loved it. They like totally,
so funny.
Yeah, it was so funny because they had been abused all night, like, you know.
Yeah, and now they're getting loved on.
Yeah, and then David, you know, comes up and does none of that. and has a great time. And just like, it's like being hugged when he does stand up. It's like being hugged by somebody and then you're laughing because they're hugging you.
Sometimes literally with David.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true.
his Titanic bit for those of you listening that have not kind of followed or seen David Studebaker. He has his closing bit, which I guess spoiler alert for a David Studebaker stand-up routine, but you know, he brings somebody out into the audience basically, or brings them up on stage and does the whole Titanic thing with them, which funny story. And I don't know if you know, you probably don't know this, James. I was doing a show with David at Punchline. Okay. And this is actually David's caller ID picture on my phone, but is of him pulling up a friend of mine. And I knew my friend, but David did not know him. And David did not know that he was physically compromised, let's say. He's a recovering cancer patient who just did not have the physical ability to get up on stage. And David is sitting there trying to drag him on stage, thinking that, you know, he's just kind of a shy, like, no, 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 thanks. But nope, he is a, he is not... What am I trying to say?
But physically able to be up there.
Yeah, and I don't want to make him sound some kind of way, my friend, right? But yeah, you know, talking to Dave, and he's like, oh no, I was like, I mean, it's all right. Everybody's having fun, but yeah, to this day, it's David just doing his best effort and just kneeling alongside of him doing his little.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I don't know if. I don't know if David even remembers that, but I'm sure
he'd be. He's told that story. He's told that story before because it's so embarrassing to him. Like he still feels bad about it to this day. Like he's told that story to us.
I'll be sure to send a picture, the pictures that I have from that show.
That's so funny. That's David though. He's actually done it to my father-in-law, and I think he's done it to my father-in-law twice and some other people. So yeah, it's a big thing. Actually, that's how I found David. I ended up seeing that clip or seeing something like that. And then I reached out to him and then we slowly became friends and stuff. But yeah. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
It's an incredible bit.
It's what's funny about it is it's super relatable. And at the same time, it's one of those things where you're like, oh man, I wish I would have thought of this. This is genius. Right.
It's so weird. And there's so much buildup and it's starting and you're saying, is this going to happen? And you're like, oh my God, this whole thing is happening.
Yeah. Yep. And it's the best experience ever. I think the sad part is he did dry bar, you know about that, right? He did dry bar and he didn't do that. He wasn't able to do that bit in dry bar. And it's like, is it even a David Studebaker show if that doesn't happen? You know what I'm saying? So,
I mean, did he talk about Pitbull having a bad agent? Because, you know,
yeah, probably
that one too.
Because
it's Studebaker. Yeah.
We're giving away all David's bits on this.
I know.
Show.
He's like, I am. Yeah. Well, sorry, David. Should have been here.
what do you have a favorite bit that you do or a favorite bit that people know you for? Like mine is my FTB bit, right? It's called FTB, but that means feed the bears. It's one that people have brought up to me and said to me and know. Do you have a bit like that people know about you?
I mean, I think my favorite is probably I go into a bit about the Power Rangers. Okay. And that's something I've closed on a couple times and just, you know, pointing out like, oh, okay, the three white guys are the red, white, and blue Rangers. And, you know, there's the black guy who's the black Ranger. And there's, you know, the Asian chick who's the yellow Ranger. And just kind of pointing out that it's kind of a weird and maybe low-key racist show. It makes a good bit. Yeah, yeah. Honestly, though, I think like that, to me, I think is my favorite just because it's like, I love Power Rangers, and anytime you know you get a chance to kind of dive into that nostalgia, it's really fun. But I think the stuff that people like would probably say they know me best about is just doing stuff about my mom, because she just has like her accent is just like instantly recognizable to anybody that knows her. You know, James, she kind of sounds like this, and you know, at first people think it is an exaggeration, but no, not an exaggeration. This is how she sounds. And people that know her are like, again, not knowing her, it's like, okay, that's a bit much, Danny, like whatever. But again, people that know her or would have met her, you know, they're like, oh my God, no, that's exactly her name is Mimi. So, you know, they'd be like, that's Mimi Halloweeny right there.
That's a good name.
It's a great name. And she loved the attention. You know, she would go up to me and tell me like after shows, like, oh, you know, Danny, I'm so proud of you. And, you know, thanks for putting in so many jokes about me, making me kind of, you know, the star of your show. People would come up to me, say, hey, you're that guy's mom. Yes. Congratulations, mom. You are that guy's mom now. I love that lady. Not to get like too heavy, but she passed in February couple years ago. And it's just like, you know, you go back on those and it's like, you feel like you kind of like lost your muse a little bit, you know? And the material, I guess, to me at least, like, feels a little different now, because it's not like, it's not like funny things my mom is doing, but it's like funny things that like I remember her for. Yeah. So it's, in fact, actually since she passed, I haven't like, I'm trying to think, I've done stand up like over Zoom and I've, but I don't think I've actually like done stand up. So, it will be interesting, right? Whenever that next opportunity comes, be like, all right, let's figure something out and let's see, you know, where we get her involved in. But yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the stuff that like, you know, a person that comes to a Danny Howaweeny show would be like, oh, hell yeah, he's about to do the mom stuff. Like, watch, yeah. You know, it's going to be good.
That's always good. Like when you have something that people recognize too or whatever, yeah. Cause they need that. I had a question, then it just went out the window. I don't even know what it was going to be now. That's awesome that your mom loved that. Now, do you do your wife and kids too now? Like, is that something that you brought in yet?
No, I mean, I'm sure the kids, honestly, you know, the kids are what, two, right now. So when they're like, when the oldest one was a baby, there wasn't like as much material for me quite yet, because there's really no like personality for me to make fun of, you know? Right. And yeah, I don't know. To me, I guess like stand up about that wasn't necessarily super interesting. Like, right. Hey, have you heard about this changing diapers thing? Be like, I guess, you know, but yeah, I think especially as my oldest is now like old enough to have a personality, I'm sure there would be things that I could kind of come up with and think of. My wife, I haven't really done too much. A little bit about like her TV viewing habits. Like I love a good Real Housewives bit, you know, but my wife isn't plain by any means, but for me, there needs to be sort of a real hook to sort of latch onto. Right. And she's just charming and funny, but she doesn't have like a hook that I can like really get into and be like, oh, she does this thing. It's like, no, she's just a genuinely funny, good person. I don't know.
Right. No, and I always wanted to do bits like that. Like my youngest daughter, I would go get her up from her naps so my wife could sleep a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And the first thing she would do after I like held her, she would like smile at me, stretch, and then poop her pants like right away, every single time. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this kid. My wife was like, she's so relaxed around you. I'm like, that's not relaxed.
Because she just dropped a huge one. I will more than likely have, you know, and we've had many a conversation about, you know, Disney Plus basically being on a loop. So I'm sure there's going to be lots of stuff to pull from, you know, with Frozen 2, and now Luca is the new hot movie in the household. So nice. You know, there's stuff to eventually pull from when the time is right.
Yeah, I haven't seen Luca yet. I keep on I'm behind on that. To be fair though, I'm not a big like Disney animated movie thing. I mean, I'm liking What If right now, but it's Marvel, yeah. So that's the only way, right. I get away with it. But otherwise, not really.
Yeah, Luca, I will say though, is charming as hell. You know, with Frozen and Frozen 2, you know, now we dive into unofficial Disney Tonight Show podcast territory, but yeah. You know, there's stuff where it's like, wow, this is beautiful, or oh, the music is good, but there's a lot of times you're kind of scratching your head like, I mean, wait, really? Okay. Luca, like I said, is just charming. It's just like the characters are all likable. It's set in like a little, you know, port side town in like Italy, you know, and it's just like, it's so cute. It's so fun. I don't know. So that's one where, do I want to watch it 20 times in a day? No, but am I okay with that being kind of the movie du jour? Like, yeah, I'm good with that one.
That's awesome. Yeah, my kids aren't do that, but they watch a lot of the Disney Channel shows still, like, you know, like Casey Undercover or like Ant Farm or that kind of stuff, right, or whatever.
Okay.
So I hear all the things, like I know what's going on with all the Disney stuff, and I'm like, all right,
whatever. Yeah.
But I'm definitely different on that. Now, you said that you consider yourself a person that does stand up, not a stand-up comedian. So with that being said, what is, you don't have to divulge it, I guess, but like, what is your day job then? If you're not a comedian, or do you make money with comedy? Is that something that you do use?
I have made money in comedy, but it's not like earn a living kind of money. It's basically like gas money and, oh, the club turned a profit and we brought in enough people. Here's your share. The way I looked at it is, I think with a lot of different things, I think there is sort of an imposter syndrome that, that people have to kind of fight against. For me, I think just with my family life, I've never really wanted to sort of take that step of being like, I'm leaving my day job, I'm doing the thing, I'm going to make it work. And I've met a lot of people that are, you know, are doing that and really like putting themselves out there, and they have TikTok and they're making all these videos and they, you know, doing the thing on all the socials. You know, for me though, I'm like, I love that and I want to pursue that, but I want to pursue it leisurely because I don't want to sort of interrupt my ability to send my daughter to college. You know, I'm the gift of gab is still something I use to pay the bills. I'm in sales. So, you know, I sit on Zoom calls, I talk to people, and, you know, I don't know, I try to keep it light. I don't want to be a jerk, you know, used car salesman kind of guy, but more so like, hey, let's talk, you know, whatever. Let's at least make it fun because maybe you don't want to be here, right? So I guess that's where the background kind of helps. But yeah, for me, if it ever seemed like, oh, shoot, there actually could be something there, like, I would love to, right? I would love to do like voiceover work. I would love to, I mean, yeah, obviously shoot for the moon, right? Yeah, of course, I would love to be in movies and have a Madison Square Garden sold out tour. Yeah, frickin' obviously. Right. Do I think that's realistic? Probably not, you know? So I'm like, let's pursue this as something that's really fun. Let's try to fill as much of kind of off time as I can doing things that make me happy. But for me, again, instead of being a stand-up comedian, I'll just be a guy that does stand up, but I got a day job. And yeah,
I'm lucky. I get to say that I'm a stand-up comedian and comedy writer. So it's good for me. Like, it doesn't really works. It works well. That's one thing. For a while, I never even told people I did stand up or whatever and stuff, or like when I made money from stand up, right? And I have, but like when I was making money and I was like, oh, it's good. My wife would always be like, you should tell people you do stand. I'm like, I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? I'm a customer service supervisor. You know, like I was, and I hated that job. So yeah. Like, whatever. So,
well, yeah. And customer service supervisor does have quite a ring to it. Where, yeah. No offense to customer supervisors and you know, but yeah,
I didn't like. I mean, it was whatever. It paid the bills.
We got to do the bills, man.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember like right at the beginning of the pandemic. I got fired from one job on Monday. I got interviewed for the next job on Tuesday. I started that job on Wednesday. I worked there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And at the end of the day on Friday, I was let go because the pandemic had shut down my new job. So I literally, in 1 week, I lost two jobs. It was like the worst week ever. But then I was like, you know what? Like, I remember going home and thinking, what am I going to do now? And I just sat at my desk and I looked at like my website and all this stuff. And I was like, you know what? Just do it until you get a new job. And so every day I would just do stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to do stuff till I get a new job. And I did. I applied every single week to something. And just like everything is like, oh, well, we don't know what's going on. So we're not hiring. Oh, we're not doing
it. That's got to be crazy. Yeah.
It's like two years of that. You know what I'm saying? Like the beginning, I was like, so I mean, you're two of that. And I'm like, well, now I'm doing okay. Now I have things rolling. Things are moving. I figured out some of the you know, the cogs in the wheel, how to get it to work.
Yeah.
I'm not to where I want to be, obviously. Like, I'd love to be making great money doing it, but, you know, it's enough to like, okay, I can do this thing, I can do this thing. But then I also picked up another bad habit during the pandemic too.
What's
that? Are you familiar with Magic the Gathering?
Oh yes, okay.
That's my bad habit now. It's a real bad habit. So
yeah, and especially now there's a nostalgia factor, like we talked about before. Now I'm sure that's a more expensive bad habit than it would have been some 20 years ago.
Yes, it is very expensive. Yeah. I just bought a card that was it was banned previously, and they unbanned it today. They literally unbanned it today. Okay. If you looked at how much it was yesterday, the card was like $1.29. Yeah. When I went to go pick it up, it was $12. And now if you go look at it, it's like $26 or something like that.
All right.
Like literally in one day, just like boop, boop, boop.
That's a good investment, my friend.
I know. Yeah. I wish I would have got it when it was $1.29, but I had no clue it was going to be $1.29.
So. Yeah. Hey, though, props to you. I meant to say, but with the COVID stuff, like that's a hell of a silver lining to, you know, hey, I don't have a job and it's a bummer, but now's as good a time as any to swing for the fences, you know? I mean, comedy writing, I think, is something that, you know, would definitely interests me as well. Like I love the sort of tactile, like putting something down on paper. And I love like punching up when I perform, not to say I just read from a script in my mind, but I at least prepare what I'm going to say. And I kind of riff off of that. But that process of like sitting there and like banging out a set and like going through and crafting and putting this word here instead of there and changing the inflection on this term, and the comedy writing to me is very gratifying, and I love that nature of it. So, you know, good on you for still kind of being active even without a quote unquote day job, you know?
Yeah.
Easy to sit on your hands and be like, oh, it sucks.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be home collecting unemployment or just home and not doing anything and just buying like have cards. Yeah, buying magic cards or having my family come home every day and be like, hey, what'd you do today? I'm like, I just watched a bunch of TV, you know, like yeah. I didn't want to be that guy. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make stuff. I'm gonna write my own stuff. I wrote stuff for other people. I collaborated with other people. Like I worked on all kinds of stuff, and it, you know, good, bad, otherwise, it's turned into something that I'm thinking hopefully by the end of the year, beginning of next year, I could turn it into actually like a real job career type thing. So we're getting there.
Yeah. I feel like people in this line of work, like there are some extroverts, there are some introverts, but I feel like everybody has at least some drive, you know, whether it's like an outgoing nature, whether it's like a behind the scenes thing, like to even get up on stage and tell jokes or to start writing material, like there has to be a drive there. Right. So yeah, I don't think it's in our nature, and I don't mean to overly generalize, but I wouldn't think it's in our nature to just sit there and want to be like, well, I guess there's nothing to do. Cause like, nah, I mean, we're creators to some degree, you know? So it's like, of course there's something to do. So yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I did a lot of Zoom shows at the beginning of the pandemic, and then slowly throughout the pandemic, it kind of waned. And then I get like one or two a month. And then like, I haven't done one in, I don't know, 2 months now, but I did a live show like a month ago, and
nice.
It went well. It was like, I haven't been on stage in I don't remember how long. And yeah, because I actually did stand up the week before the pandemic thing hit California and everything kind of shut down. So I did stand up the week before, and I was like, yes, it's going to be all, because I was ready. I'm like, I was working to try to go get a dry bar special too. So I'm like, all right, this is the year. I'm going to get everything that I need to do. I'm like, every month I've got a timeline. I've doing everything. I just went, dropped, because I was like, I was trucking. I was like, yes, I'm on my timeline, everything's going well, I'm writing, I'm doing this. No.
Yeah.
Mother Nature was like, no, you're not doing any of that. But David took the dry bar special, so he was prepared. I was not prepared, so he did it, and I'm very happy that he did it, and I can't wait to see that when it comes out.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, Danny, if you were teaching a new stand-up comedian or talking to a brand new stand-up comedian, what's one piece of advice you would give them?
I would say trust your content. Trust your material. I think it's really easy when you're writing to say, okay, what would the audience think is funny? And of course, that consideration needs to be there. But at the same time, I think at a certain point, you just need to kind of trust that you're probably funny, right? If you're going to be going up on stage, it's probably because you got a funny bone and you make people laugh in your normal day-to-day life. So instead of thinking what potentially would the audience think is funny, like, what do you think is funny, right? What makes you laugh? And then obviously make that into a relatable, you know, provide the context for an audience to also think it's funny. But yeah, to me, that was like, I think the biggest thing for me that at least made me feel comfortable is kind of, you know, not assuming that the audience is going to think it's funny, that sounds some kind of way, but just, hey, you've done this before and you're a quote unquote funny person. So just write what you think is funny and you'll sort of believe in it more and you'll be funnier when you deliver it. And hey, guess what? At the end of the day, the audience will probably find that funny too. You know, because if you're just trying to pander to the audience, like, I don't know, maybe they can tell, maybe they don't, maybe you get some laughs, but it'll probably feel pretty stilted and kind of a low energy kind of set. So that'd be probably my first thing is just, you know, if you really do think you're funny, then just go for it and just trust what makes you laugh. Trust your sense of humor.
I like that. Trust your sense of humor. That's a great thing to tell somebody because yeah, whatever you find funny, you're going to have an easier time relating that to other people. So that makes sense. Totally. Where can people find you? Where can they find some of your comedy? Where can they find some of your stuff?
Yeah. I mean, comedy wise, YouTube would probably just be the easiest way. I mean, Danny Howellini, there aren't too many of us floating around in the world. you know, I'm on all the socials. You know, again, once family comes in the picture, a lot of stuff is just going to be flooded with pictures of my kids, which, hey, you're welcome to go check out Perry and Murphy if you want. Twitter is mostly me just kind of crapping on politicians, but now and again, I get some good stuff in there. But YouTube, from a comedy standpoint, some of the older routines that I grabbed on video, obviously it's stuff I'm doing with the unofficial Disney Tonight Show podcast, you know, but yeah, I think the link for that would be in my Instagram. So, okay. You know, look all over. Again, if you search for Danny Howellini, you know, you're going to have a pretty easy time finding me.
I will put the links in the show notes too, so everybody can find it. So thank you again, Danny, for being on here. Thank you everybody for listening. Please do me a huge favor. Go to YouTube, subscribe to the channel. You don't have to watch everything. Just go subscribe. We're at 499 subscribers. We keep getting close to like that 500, and then like goes like 498, then 499, then 498. I'm like,
come on, people. Let's let this be the push.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's bring it to 1,000. I need 1,000. We get to 1,000. We can push. So like, get us to 500. Then here's what we'll do. Every time that we get a new subscriber, I'll shout out the name of the new subscriber. I'll go look and find out who it was, and I'll shout out the name. I'll figure out how to do that. I don't know how to do it yet, but I'll find a way.
Or there's a way, James.
Or just put it in the comment, hey, James, I'm a new subscriber, and I will put your name on the podcast. It'll be awesome. I would love to do that. I want to support you guys. You guys are supporting us. You're watching our stuff. I know you're listening because there's like thousands of listening people. Go check it out on YouTube. See Danny's beautiful face. See my ugly face and enjoy the time that we have here. So
got a couple of faces for radio here, James.
Yeah, that's so true. I always say that. I have the face for radio. That's perfect. Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great week and bye.